Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we're going to talk to a new thriller writer. She has written a new book called Creep, a thriller of deadly attraction, and her name is Jennifer Hillier. And she's joining us here to talk about her new book. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Hi. You're Canadian.
Yes, I am. I'm from Toronto.
There's a lot of really talented writers from Toronto in that area.
Yeah, I'm in good company.
Joy Fielding and...
Robert Rotenberg and Hillary Davidson.
And Chelsea... What's her name? Not Chelsea. I get them mixed up. Chevy Stevens.
Yes, Chevy Stevens. Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff. I mean, this book is so interesting to read. I mean, it's one of those books you really get into.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, really. Now, I'm looking at the handcuffs on the cover. I'm not quite sure where that...
Telling.
What's that?
So the handcuffs are a little bit telling.
Yeah, so not many books you see with handcuffs on the cover. That's
no,
for sure.
I guess not.
But when one looks at this book, and when I first looked at it, I thought, creep, I don't know what that's about. Does that mean somebody's creeping through people's bushes and killing people, or what is it? Because you can tell right away it's a thriller, obviously. It just looks like, it has the feel of a thriller.
Yeah, I did a good job with the cover art. I was really happy.
There's a huge twist ending to this book, which we can't reveal and we can't even talk about it, which is like torture.
Let's not do that.
But whoever hasn't read the book, you're in for a real treat, and we can't even tell you what it is because we give away something major. But did you know when you were writing the book that there was going to be that at the end?
I knew that. I didn't know what was going to happen from the middle to the end, but I knew how I wanted it to end. So it was really just a matter of working my way there.
Well, let me ask this question, and don't be offended if I ask this question, but does your mind have to be twisted a little bit to make up these twisted stories?
Yeah, I think so. It helps definitely to be a little twisted in your own head.
But to think of some of these, I mean, and these characters, which are sometimes really nasty.
Yeah, they're nasty.
And do nasty things. Is that fun to create those characters?
Totally. There's no rules. You know, when you write people who are very, very flawed... there's really very few rules involved. You know, I think the hardest character was Sheila because, you know, how do you have a main character who makes so many mistakes and who can, you know, in some ways be really unlikable but have people still want to find out what happens to her? That was the biggest challenge. But the villain part, I mean, that's fun, you know. That's my favorite part to write are the bad guys.
Hannibal Lecter was fun to create. Can you imagine how much fun he was to create? I mean, here's a villain that just has no redeeming qualities at all.
No, exactly.
Really.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about this book is the more we get into it, the more we think we know what's going on, we don't. And that's what makes this book so great, in addition to the fact that you really know how to write.
Oh, thank you.
And you really... But, I mean, writing is to me, I mean, I pick up a book, and so many, there's so many books out there, and I pick up a book, and a lot of times, you know, I read the first page or read the first whole page, and I'm like, oh, I don't think I can get into this.
Right.
Or even worse, you can, but it takes 100 pages to get into
it. Right, right. And, I didn't have 100 pages. I had to nail it from the beginning
right.
if I wanted to get published.
But how did you get published? I mean,
I slush pile. I queried about 100 agents. And I got rejected by about half of them, and I got some requests, and one of those requests turned into an offer of representation, but it was really just all through email and letters and hoping and praying that someone would want to read the book.
Now, you said an author, what was that?
I'm sorry?
You said you got accepted and you had an author...
An offer of representation.
Oh, an offer of representation.
Yeah. I really just went about it a very basic way. I didn't know anyone. I didn't have any connections. It was just me putting, you know, query letters out into the universe and hoping they came back.
Yeah, because you have to be prepared for rejections.
Oh, the rejections were horrible. I'm not even going to pretend they weren't.
I mean, can you tell when you get a letter in the mail, can you tell from how the letter is, whether it's a rejection?
You develop this way of reading the rejection really fast, and you look for the key words, like if it says, unfortunately, or I'm sorry, but, then you know it's going to be a pass. And you get really good at knowing right off the bat. And it stings. So, every time someone says no, it stings.
Did you cry at all? I mean, is it something where you open up and you cry? And you're like,
the first rejection came on my 10-year anniversary. So I don't know what I was thinking. I sent out my first few queries on the day of my 10-year anniversary. And just like a bonehead, checked my email as we were like walking out the door, and there was my first rejection, like super quick. I think it was like 90 minute turnaround, and it totally ruined our night. I was in such a horrible mood that night. It got a little bit better, you know, the more rejections that you get, the easier they get, but they still sting. Yeah, the only time I cried, though, was when I got the offer, when my agent called and said she liked the book and wanted to represent it. I cried then.
Well, what's the question, I mean, what goes through your head right away when you hear that is you think, well, why did somebody else reject it? Why would they take it? I mean, what was it about? And this book is really, really special. And
I don't know. I really don't. I mean, a lot of people, I think, the feedback that I got early on was that the main character was difficult to like. You know, she is. I mean, she's a difficult woman, and she's complex, and she's got demons.
But so is Hannibal Lecter, and yet look where they took him.
Right, but Hannibal's a bad guy, and Sheila's not supposed to be a bad guy, right? So how do you read a book about a heroine that makes so many bad choices?
And well,
so,
she's flawed. A lot of people are flawed.
And I love that about her. It's what makes her interesting to write. But
I mean, look, any modern day series has a very flawed character. Even Harry Bosch is terribly flawed.
I agree. But that seems to be, I think, one of the reasons why other agents passed. But my agent really liked her, and my agent didn't tell me to tone it down and didn't make me cut anything that I loved. So. Obviously, we're a good match.
That's the thing. It's not like you can just write a book and say, here, this is the way I want it to be put in print. They don't do that. They have their own rules. And
oh, for sure, yeah. It's a collaborative process, and you have to ask yourself what kind of agent you want to work with. You know, do you want to work with someone who wants a perfect book, and then it's going to go out in submission right away, or are you willing to work with someone who's going to have a lot of editorial input? Are you okay with that? You know, for me, I loved... Victoria is my agent, and she has a lot of editorial input in everything that I do. I love that.
She sounds familiar. I think I've heard that.
Victoria Skernick, yeah, of Levine Greenberg.
Oh no, that's not the Victoria I was thinking of for some reason, but. It's just so terrific to know that. I mean, I don't know how you can read this book and not know that it's something different. It's something really, really good. It's something different from what you've read before, and definitely publishable. That's what I can't fathom in my head, why somebody would turn it down, other than what you said about the unlikable character.
Thanks. I didn't know that it was publishable, really, until it got published. You know?
Well, who is Sheila? Is she somebody you know? Is she based on somebody you know?
Totally, totally fictional. Yeah.
But what makes you create a character that is like that?
I just wanted someone who made mistakes. You know, a lot of characters, you know, they're... the horrible things that happen to them sometimes happen to them without them having any, you know, cause in that. And I wanted Sheila to dig her own grave. I wanted her to make choices that put her in a hole that she now had to climb her way out of. I thought that would be so much more interesting than having, you know, her just be this perfect person who bad things happen to.
And
I
she
wanted her to create her situation, right, and then I wanted her to fix it.
Right, and I'm not going to give anything away. This is early in the book. We learned that she had an affair with a student. And
yeah, she did. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and that's a very current problem. There's a lot of that going on.
Oh, it's more common than people think, you know, and it happens quite a bit, actually. People.
Well, all you want to say is, what in the world would possess you to do something stupid like that? Because not only is it stupid emotionally, because of the age difference,
but her career, and she's engaged to another man, and yeah, it's a stupid.
I mean, you're risking your whole life.
Oh, risking her whole life, you know, and then the student turns out not to be this regular grad student; he turns out to be something worse.
And what was that movie with Judi Dench and what's her name? Oh gosh, I can't think of the woman's name. Very famous actress too. She has an affair with a student. It's a spectacular movie, but it's one of the most unsettling movies you'll ever watch.
Okay.
I can't think of the name of it now. What's her name's in it? The girl that was in Robin Hood with Russell Crowe.
Oh, okay.
Kate Blanchett.
Okay.
They did this movie together. Now I can't remember the name of it. It's a spectacular movie where she becomes friends with Judi Dench, meanwhile she's having an affair with this student . And the things with Judi Dench get really tense because Judi Dench finds out about her affair.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And then she rejects Judi Dench, and then Judi Dench wants to tell everybody about the affair. It's
right.
it's one of those movies that just...
Yeah.
You've seen it?
No, I haven't, but I can imagine.
it's just one of the most intense. It's one of those movies you can't stop watching once you start it. And,
wow.
And your book is, I mean, it's sort of the same way. It's hard to, when you get to the middle, you have to know what's going to happen at the end. I mean, how is this going to resolve itself?
I knew that. Yeah, I mean, it was just, like I said, a matter of working my way to get to that ending. I mean, I think I don't outline my books before I write them, so I make a lot of mistakes in early drafts, and I go down a lot of wrong paths, and I have to revise and get myself back on track. But I knew what I wanted the ending to be, and I envisioned a sequel. So, I mean, I knew that was going to happen.
Right. I wasn't even going to mention that because I was afraid I'd give something away.
No.
But,
there's a follow-up. There's more stories to be told.
Right.
With this,
well, we shouldn't even go there. I'm not even going to ask that question. I'm too tempted to ask the question. I think I just keep my mouth shut because I'm bound to give something away. People are going to love this book. I mean, I loved it, and it leaves you with a sense of, oh wow, I can't wait to read the next one now.
Thank you.
Which is
that I did my job.
Which is exactly what you wanted people to feel.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
But how long, from beginning to end, was this a long book to write? I mean, did it take you a long time to write?
5 months for the first draft.
That's it? Five months?
5 months. That was, about how it... Yeah, 5 months. And then I think another 8 months for revisions. The revisions were definitely way more intense than the first draft.
Are the revisions repetitive? Does it get, after a while, do you get tired of looking at the same stuff over and over and over again?
Well, I start macro and then I work my way to micro. So when I'm revising, I look at structural problems, I look at plot holes, and then my second draft or third draft, then I'm looking more at the writing. And then by the end, I'm really just nitpicking. You just write it until you run out of things to change. But yeah, it can get really tedious, especially in like drafts 3 and 4.
I mean, you talk about unlikable characters. Ethan is pretty pretty unlikable himself.
He's unlikable, but I still love him.
You love this twisted...
He's my baby.
Horribly twisted man.
Horrible twisted man boy.
So what when you're writing this book, what goes through your head? I mean, do you have to get into their heads?
You do, and I write from a very close point of view, and when I'm, in someone's head, I'm in it all the way, and I want to know what they're looking at and what they're smelling and what they're tasting, and I want it to be a really visceral experience for the reader, because it is for me, so I want that to be captured, on the page, and I like seeing things from the different perspectives. I had 4 main points of view, I think. I had Sheila, Morris, Ethan, and Jerry, the private eye, and each one was fun. I mean, it's nice getting into their heads and seeing things how they would see it.
And you think to yourself, well, I mean, anybody can come up with an idea, but to be able to put it down on paper to make it sound more than plausible, it has to sound like it has to read from beginning to end like this could really happen. And
yeah,
yours does.
Yeah, it does.
I wonder how you do that. I wonder what.
I don't know. I wish I could explain it. I don't know. I just write the stories that I want to read. And I know that I've been reading thrillers for a really long time, and I have my favorite authors, but I wanted something maybe a little grittier, maybe a little more, I don't know, maybe sexier. I don't know. I just wanted to write something a little different than what I'd been reading lately. So,
are there writers that kind of influenced you to want to write?
I think my biggest influence is probably Stephen King, just because I've been reading him since I was a kid.
Hmm.
And he writes characters so well, and I really try to strive for that in my books. And I'm a big fan of Jeffrey Deaver, and I'm a big fan of Chelsea Kane. I love the genre. I've been reading it for a really long time.
And speaking of Chelsea Kane, with her nasty woman, sort of, who's very similar to Lecter.
We're both Northwest, and we're both, psychological thriller type things, I think her books are a bit more procedural, like police procedural than mine are, but I love her stories, yeah, definitely.
But when you have a nasty character, if you get rid of the character, sometimes it takes all the fun out of the book.
That's
the danger.
My books don't work without the villain, so, I have to have a really good, really sort of three-dimensional villain to make the book work. That's my favorite part to write. So.
And with George Martin now, where there's all this controversy about them killing off one of the major characters in the book, I think that's fascinating, because the bottom line is the books have to be real, and there's real danger. I mean, there's real danger in your book, there's real danger in a lot of books, and you can't ignore that.
No, you can't.
And
killing people is hard for me. I don't enjoy that at all. Even the bad guys, I don't like killing.
And, you know, and people have been, another author who got criticized for it was Karen Slaughter, when she killed one of her main characters. And, you know, you think to yourself, well, it's got to be real. And they're police officers,
yeah.
And it can happen. It could happen any time.
Right, exactly.
So,
and you want to stay true to the story, you know, and not everyone's going to like what you do, but you have to make the best choices you can make as the author, you know, what you see is best. I mean, I don't know. There's no way to please everybody, unfortunately.
Now, are you part Asian?
I'm all Asian, actually. My parents
You're all Asian.
Were born in
okay.
the Philippines, yeah. And I was born and raised in Canada, so I don't speak the language.
So how did you get to Canada? I mean, how did that come about?
I mean, Well, I was born there. My parents moved to Canada in the early 70s.
Oh, okay.
And they got married, and they had me. And so
Stupid question, wasn't it? How did you get to Canada? Obviously, somebody brought you.
I was born in Canada.
You just say.
I'm a Canadian citizen.
I guess what I was trying to say is how did you make it to Canada? I mean, from the Philippines. I was curious the travel. What happened?
I think my parents took a plane.
Yeah.
I never asked.
But I look at you and I think, well, Jennifer Hillier is certainly not an Asian name.
No, that's a married name. Yeah, and my husband's Canadian, too. His family is like fifth, sixth generation Canadian. They've been in Canada for a long time. So.
You must have a brilliant mind to be able to come up with all these scenarios in this book.
No, I don't think it's brilliant. I think it's just, I'm not even going to pretend that I think I'm talented or whatever. It's just hard work.
Is it dangerous to think that, do you think?
I think so. You know, you don't want to start thinking you're brilliant. If you think you're brilliant, you're probably not. I don't think that I'm brilliant or talented. I just think I really wanted it, and I really wanted it bad, and I worked at it really hard.
I think Jeffrey Deaver would admit he's brilliant, because we know he's brilliant.
Oh, well, Jeffrey Deaver is brilliant, and he's a really nice guy, too. He's really, really, really chill in person. Like, he's...
But to be able to come up with all those stories that he's come up with and make them so elaborate.
I know, and he does his research and he writes really fast, and his books are really fun.
Would you rather your book be called a mystery or a thriller?
I like thriller myself. I don't know that it's, I mean, I guess it's a mystery, but I like the word thriller. I think psychological thriller fits. I mean, when I was querying, I decided to label it that, and it sticks. But, you know, it kind of falls in that broad category of mystery, suspense, thriller, so... Whatever says.
Well, is it easier to get a mystery or a thriller published in general, in your experience?
I don't know, but from what I've noticed, I feel like a thriller tends to be a bigger story with a bigger concept or it tends to be a bigger book, sort of. I'm not sure if that's right, but that's just sort of my perception. It just feels like if you call something a thriller, it just feels like a bigger story.
I think now is the time more for thrillers than mysteries, although, I mean, there are exceptions, but...
Maybe, but I don't know, I think the genre matters really when it comes to where do you put it on the shelf in Barnes & Noble, you know.
And then you have the books that are series and mystery
right.
and thriller also,
right.
so they cross both lines.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know, I've always called it a thriller, and if I was to be specific, I would call it a psych thriller. It's definitely not... You know, a police procedural, and it's not what do you call a historical thriller. I mean, you know, it's the subgenre is definitely psychological.
Now, would you at some point like to have a series, or is that the aim, or would you rather just write a different book each time?
You know, there's Creep is going to have a follow up for sure.
Right.
Whether there'll be a third book after that, I don't know until I get to the end of the next one. I've always pictured myself to be a standalone novelist. Like, every book would be different with different characters, but, you know.
Why a standalone? I mean, what,
yeah.
is it because it's new each book you write?
I think it's fun to start over. It's fun to create new places, and it's fun to create new people, but there is something really familiar. Like, I'm working on the sequel to Creep now, and it is nice going back. It is nice revisiting and finding out what everyone's up to, you know, and you know the characters so well that writing them is easy. Because you're not making them up because you already did, you know, so, but the challenge is then how do you make them grow?
But do you remember every little thing that you've written in the first book?
Most things, yeah, most things. You know, like, it's a lot of little things, like Sheila always wears red lipstick.
Right.
That I can always see when I'm writing her, and, you know, Morris is that cliche Texan, the way he talks, and Jerry cracks his knuckles. Which drives people crazy. I mean, it's like little things that come back to you.
And that's a point, too, from this book, and one that there's a point where Morris... And Sheila, you think they're going to break up. And I, you know, when I got to that point, I thought, well, all of a sudden, I'm not real crazy about Morris anymore. it's one of these books where you find out, you just all of a sudden realize, oh, gross, I don't like this character right now. I wish he'd just go, you know. And And then I thought, well,
so, Morris.
And then I think, well, that's how I was feeling. I mean, I think you meant to paint him as somewhat of a villain. I mean, too, he's got his terrible habits too.
Well, I think that's sort of the theme in Creep, is that we all have two faces. We have our public face, which is what we let everyone see, and then we have our personal, private face. And everyone has that, you know, two different sides to them. Sheila has it. We see that right off the bat. But Morris has his own demons too.
And well, one of the problems is the scene between Morris and Sheila, the sex scene. I don't even know if I should bring this up, but it's quite an unusual scene. I mean, but afterward you think, well, maybe these two really aren't meant to be together.
It's that was a fun scene to write.
It's like, this is a really twisted sex scene. And that it didn't go like I thought it was going to go. And that's the beauty of your...
And nothing really does, you know, and I...
Do you like doing that to readers?
Yeah, I do, because I like being messed with myself as a reader.
You really are twisted.
I make no apologies, it's true.
I mean, but it's true that you enjoy making the reader think, making the reader wonder.
There's a squirm factor in Creep. That's partly why the book's called Creep, because it creeps you out. You know, like you feel, on the one hand, you're rooting for someone, and on the other hand, you feel completely grossed out.
Or is the creep just Ethan? Ethan could just be the creep, and he could be the whole why you called it Creep.
Right, but Ethan has his complexity too, and I've heard from readers that for some readers he was the favorite character of the book because he was so weird and different.
And weird isn't necessarily bad. I mean, there's a lot of weird people out there who are perfectly normal people. They just have weird things that they're interested
in. Right.
And who's to say what's weird anymore?
Well, there is. That's exactly it. Who knows what's weird?
I mean, what do you classify Lady Gaga?
Brilliant. I love her.
But I mean,
surprise there.
But would you say that she's weird? I mean, I don't know how you could...
Definitely weird, but she's weird in the best possible way. She's weird in a way that makes you aggravated when you look at her, but then you listen to her sing and all that goes away. And it's kind of a neat paradox, I think.
Now, what was it like when... And I assume you've done some book signings?
Just one in New York so far, and I've got one coming up in Toronto in November.
I wonder what it's like to read from your first book. I mean, what's that experience like?
I haven't read from it yet, and I'm supposed to, and I'm wondering if I can find a portion that I can read out loud.
I mean, but I'm wondering what it's like to... I know if I read something I wrote out loud, I'd feel a little weird. I don't know.
I think it's going to feel weird for me, because I'll be doing that in November, and I'm sure it's going to feel extremely weird to do that.
But the beauty of it is you've got something really good here. I mean, you've got something that's going to... I think people are really going to enjoy. I mean, I enjoyed it.
I do love this book. You know, Creep I'm really proud of it.
I have the honor of being able to talk to the author, which is fascinating. I mean, as soon as I finish this book, I'm like, boy, now I really can't wait to talk to the author. I mean, that's how that... And I think people who read this are going to wonder, or think to themselves, wow, I wish I could talk to the author.
I love talking to authors, you know. It's a big deal to talk to someone who can create a whole new world and make you feel things and entertain you for a little while, and that's my favorite part of going to writing conferences, is meeting authors, you know, because it's kind of magical, you know. And I met Jeffrey Deaver a couple of years back for the first time, and then I got to meet him again in July, and you get starstruck, you know, you really do.
And he remembers you too.
He remembered me, yeah. He blurbed my book, and then he we did have a couple of nice little discussions about Lynn Can Rhyme and his series, and he's a nice guy, and it makes that better when you realize that someone that you really admire is also a really nice person.
I mean, people read James Patterson and they think, boy, this man must really be twisted to come up with all this crap, and he's had a lot of twisted stuff in his books.
He does, yeah.
But I mean, you wonder what that does to your, what it does to you writing the book. I mean,
do you think it would change the person writing stuff like that?
I don't know. I think it depends on the person. I think it depends on... You're pretty normal. I can tell that. I mean, I don't doubt that you're mostly normal.
If I wasn't, I wouldn't tell you anyway.
Oh, really?
No.
The more you say that, the more I want to ask. You know?
No, but I'm totally normal.
But
it's fiction.
I wonder, when you started writing this book, where the idea came from? I mean, was there something you saw that sort of triggered this idea?
I don't want to say because it's so cliche and lame. But I had a dream about Ethan. Just randomly, I had a dream that there was a serial killer who was masquerading as a grad student. And I thought, ooh, that'd make a cool short story. So I wrote about 5 pages and realized it was turning into a novel. That's the story. That's how it started.
But does the story unfold in your mind? Do you see it all playing out exactly how it is?
I mean, it plays out like a movie. And this, the book came out pretty true to how I imagined it would. And, you know, I write very visually. Like, I see everything that's happening as I write it. And but I surprise myself because I don't outline. So a lot of the stuff that happened in Creep, I didn't see coming until it actually happened. I know that sounds funny, but it's true.
No, I think it's fascinating. Every author is different. I never know what an author is going to say to me and where they get their ideas from. But it's an amazing experience to read a book and to wonder, well, how did they put this all together? Where did they, how do they keep track of what the characters like, and how do they keep track of all that? You know, do they have a big blackboard in their office where they just list each character and put underneath them what exactly the character likes and what they're...
I probably should have something like that, but I don't. I probably need to start something like that, though, if there's, you know...
Do you have an unorganized mind? When you're writing, I mean.
No, I'm fairly organized. I mean, I see the book, I write linearly, so I write every scene, you know, one right after the other. I don't jump around too much. And then in revisions, I always know what I'm looking for. I make notes as I go. You know, revisit chapter 5, this needs to be expanded, you know, consider doing this in chapter 7, you know. But a lot of times I can't make those changes until I'm finished. And then I have to go back and look at the big picture and see what works and what doesn't. But I'm fairly organized, but I could be more organized for sure.
Well, they say the disorganized mind is a sign of genius, you know. or at least the disorganized office.
I'm pretty organized.
But I'm amazed that you could write this whole book in five, I mean, the first draft in 5 months. It seems like a small period of time, but
it was just ready to be written, you know. It really wanted to come out, I guess. And I don't know, I mean, I've always wanted to be a writer, but I didn't get serious about it until my 30s. And so I think that maybe to an extent I was making it for last time, and that's why it wrote itself.
Now, how many countries will this book appear in?
Right now it's in Canada, it's in the U.S., obviously, and it's going to be coming out in the U.K. In December, because it was picked up by Little Brown Sphere, a U.K. publisher.
Now, do you have somebody that is constantly trying to sell it to other countries? I mean,
the Foreign Rights Department of Simon & Schuster handles all that. So they're responsible for getting it out there.
Now, will they do an audio of this?
I don't know. I'd be delighted if they did. I haven't heard anything about that yet.
Now, tell me about your book signing you had in New York. Tell me how it went. How did people react to the book?
People were really... My book had just come out. It came out July 5, and I was in New York on July 6.
So nobody had read it there.
It was there. You know, it was sitting in the conference area and along with all the other books, but it was so new that no one really knew about it. But they featured all the debut authors that year.
Right.
On a panel, so I was able to, you know, have the book with me and talk a little bit about my experience as a writer.
I wish I had been there. I would have told everybody what a great book it was.
It's fun. It was Thriller Fest. It's fun. It's so much fun.
Oh, you were at Thriller Fest?
Yeah, it's so much fun.
Wow.
And I can't wait to go back next year, because all my favorite writers are there, you know. It's the place.
Is there...
If you're a thriller writer, that's the place to be, for sure.
All those thriller writers there. Now, is there any kind of a fear that they're going to come up to you and say they don't like your book or anything?
No. Everybody is so nice and so normal. You never know the things that we write by looking at people. You know, you look at us, we look completely normal.
I just wonder if, you know, if I were a writer, and I wish I had a thriller, I could go to Thriller Fest. But
you can go anyways as a fan.
Yeah.
Sit and listen to all the different panels and learn. I mean, it's fun.
It sounds like fun.
Yeah, it is. It's, and New York is fun, too. I've only been in New York twice.
I find it fascinating, though, that no mystery writers were ever invited to Thriller Fest. But, I mean,
it's new. It's only, like, I think 6 years old. So they're still, you know, they're still building. I mean, they're growing really fast. But they're fairly new, you know.
Right. And there's so many famous people there that come to things.
I mean, the first year that I went, I sat in on seminars taught by Steve Barry and James Rollins and this year, of course, Jeffrey Deaver was a big highlight. Yeah, Karen Slaughter gave the keynote address.
Oh, she's wonderful.
Breakfast. I mean, it's awesome to go. You know, it's the place to be, for sure.
So do you go up and just introduce yourself to all these different authors?
You can, and they're very welcoming. I'm shy by nature, so I'll usually just kind of hover. I'll sort of be standing like...
Not me. I go right up to them and talk to them.
Oh, that's good. I envy that. No, I'm too shy for that. But
that's only because I know Karen Slaughter, right? And I know a lot of these authors.
Yeah,
so.
that's the way to go. And you know, I mean, with Jeffrey Deaver, I did definitely go up to him and say hi and thank you for your quote on my book. I really appreciate it. And really nice guy.
How did that come about? Did Simon & Schuster arrange that for you?
We have the same imprint. We're both with Simon & Schuster. We're both with Gallery. The publisher of Gallery Books, Louise, she sent him a copy of it back around Christmas time.
Did she like beg him to read it? Like, please read this book.
I don't know if she begged him, but she just, I think, you know, went something like, you know, hi Jeff, here's something that you might enjoy or something. And then he read it and he submitted the blurb and
that's great. That's great. I mean, it's not like they can read every book that's handed to them.
No, they can't. And so, you know, sometimes it helps to have people who know people. And I was over the moon when I got that email. It was like, oh my God, you know, Jeffrey Deaver read my book. And oh my God, he liked it. And oh my God, like, it was a big deal. I was celebrating that day.
I bet you were. I mean,
oh, yeah.
But I mean, because a writer could just easily say, I don't like it. I don't want anything to do with it.
Well, I'm sure that happens all the time. You know, I'm sure it does. Because you wouldn't want to put your name on something that you didn't like at all, you know. But I was really happy that he liked it.
What was the hardest part of writing this book?
Believing that it could be any good. I think I'm
why?
I'm my own worst enemy, and I always think the worst. And I
Wait, let me analyze that statement. You always think the worst?
I always think the worst. I always think that, you know, what's the point? I have lots of self-defeating thoughts. You know, what's the point of doing this? No one's going to read it anyway. And so really I just tried to focus on writing it for me.
Why is that, I wonder? Why do you have that attitude?
I don't know, but it makes you hungry. It makes you off.
There's one thing there's no doubt in my mind about, is that you have talent.
Oh, thank you so much.
You really do.
I thank you so much, but it's weird to hear you say that, because I don't think of myself as talented. I just think of myself as really, really diligent.
But I want to be...
Annoyingly persistent, you know, if anything.
But if I were going to give you a piece of advice, and as a reader... I say to you, make the whole thing interesting. Now, that sounds like an easy thing. You know, sure, I can just make everything easy.
But
a lot of, I hear readers that come into the store, and I work at a bookstore, so I hear all this, say they couldn't get into a book. So the most important thing is that a reader needs to be able to get into the book.
Yes.
And that's if they can't, they're going to put it down.
They will.
They're not going to read it.
I mean, I have. You know, that happens.
And it's scary, and I feel the same way. I mean, I will give a book a chance sometimes. It depends on how bad it is at the beginning.
Well, you know, there's a lot of books that you could be reading, and, you know, you have to manage your time as well. And if you know after 50 pages, I mean, that's even generous to some extent, that this book isn't grabbing you, why would you keep going, you know?
Why don't you just explain the book real quick for people who haven't... We haven't really talked about the plot.
Okay,
and I want to hear you describe it.
It's a psychological thriller about a very popular psychology professor in Seattle who has an affair with her grad student, who then turns out to be someone very, very bad. And he stalks her, he manipulates her, and she has to basically fight to save her own life as a result of her bad choices.
Right. That's a very succinct way of putting it.
I said it once or twice before.
What do you do? I mean, when you're writing, you can't really be negative. You've got to be positive.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you change that? I mean, how do you obviously?
You tell your brain to shut up. You know, that's really it. You tell your brain to shut up, because those thoughts are going to be there, and you just tell them to shut up so you can write that page. You know, I tell myself, stress about it tomorrow.
You say you really have like demons.
Oh, for sure. You know, for sure. Self-confidence is my worst.
And you could write a book about a writer with demons, and then know firsthand what it's like. You know, exactly. I mean, you could describe it word for word.
For sure. I mean, you know, I think the hardest part about writing for me is the self-doubt that creeps up. But, I mean, I love to write. I don't know any writer who doesn't love to write.
Well,
Why would you do it if you didn't love it? It's so hard, you know?
You never had anybody tell you were a bad writer, did you?
No, never. I've had really supportive people, actually, in my life, you know, and...
including your parents and your family and...
Yeah, parents were always very supportive. My mom is, you know, a big fan of the genre. She's the one who got me into it in the first place. My husband's super supportive. So I've never had any... It's me. It's my own stuff, for sure.
In my mind, I think, well, it's got to come from somewhere. Where does she get that negativity from?
I just want to be good at something, you know, at this.
Are you a perfectionist?
Yeah, kind of.
I like the way you say, yeah, kind of. So I'm not quite sure what the answer to that question was.
Yeah, I'm a perfectionist. I mean, you know, when the book went out, like when we submitted the book to Simon & Schuster and they bought it, I was expecting to get, you know, pages and pages of editorial notes, you know, things that the editor would want changed or you know, made different or what have you. And they didn't change anything. And I was freaked out by that because I was fully expecting, you know, her to say, okay, so let's do more of this and let's do less of this. But nothing was changed, really.
And a lot of writers do get that.
A lot of writers do. And I'd heard lots of stories about, okay, you know, it took me 3 months to get the revisions done. She sent them to me and she said, okay, this will take you about an hour. And it did.
Oh, you're really lucky.
But I submitted it really clean because I'm a little bit anal like that. Like, it was really clean. I don't think my second book is going to be nearly as clean as that.
So you really didn't have a deadline on this book, because
the first one, no, and that's the luxury of the first novel, is you can take as long as you need to.
So how are you going to fare with a deadline? You have one now.
Yeah, I do have one.
Do you feel, is it more pressure?
Definitely. You know,
so what do you do to deal with that pressure? I mean, is it eat chocolate or something?
Chocolate. Yeah, a lot of chocolate helps. And I've given up coffee because I was getting really stressed. And coffee was making it worse. So I don't drink coffee anymore.
But how does it feel to know that you're talented, though?
I don't feel that way. I really don't. I just feel
But
like
you
I'm
are. I insist
so
that you are.
Oh, thank you so much. It means the world to hear you say that. But I don't know that I'll ever believe that.
And that's one of the joys I have of doing interviews. I can actually tell the writer that I love their book. I mean,
it
doesn't get any better than that, to be able to tell them, you know, this is really great stuff. And,
thank you.
And I really like this, and I really can recommend it.
Oh, thank you so much. That, I mean, that's everything right there. You know, if we can get people to read the book that we write and then like it enough to tell someone else to read it, that's all we can hope for. You know?
Now, if this has monster sales and it gets on the New York Times or whatever happens with it, do you want it to be like? Would you be willing to write 5-6 books with the same characters?
I don't know. That's a good question. You know, I don't know if.
Well, how do you feel right now?
That much. I mean, as long as I continue to love the series or the books, yeah, I would probably be open to that.
Can you see the possibilities of doing that?
Yeah, I could see the possibilities of doing that, for sure. I'm open to it. I can't think much more than a book ahead, though, you know, and I can definitely see, you know, writing a series, which is something I probably wouldn't have considered a couple years back, but as long as it still is magical for me, because I think if it loses its magic for me, no one's going to want to read it.
I think it's fascinating, and I'm trying to convince you you're a good writer. I think that's really fascinating. I mean, usually the authors know that, and I don't even have to say that. They just say, well, thank you, and that's it, and they move on. But
thank you.
To hear your appreciation, I love it. It's endearing, and it's nice. It's just because I know you have talent. I know that your ability to tell a story is really good, and you're able to shock, you're able to twist the tale a little bit to keep it interesting, and we get into the minds of these people, which... I mean, let's face it, that's what makes Stephen King so wonderful. We get into his characters' minds.
Exactly, and when you really believe in the character, you'll believe anything they go through.
I mean, you have to bring your characters to life. If you don't bring them to life, the book's going to feel fake.
For sure.
And
readers can spot an authenticity. I mean, you can't fool a reader at all. And if you're being fake, it's going to come right across.
I mean, I'm reading a very famous thriller writer now. I don't want to say the name of the book because it's not out yet, but... All of a sudden, right in the middle of the book, I'm finding that I'm just falling in love with the book. And I don't know why it happens, but every once in a while you read a book, and all of a sudden you just, wow, this is just really great. I want to see how this plays out. You know, I have a feeling that something's going to happen. There's kind of this love affair mixed in the middle of the book. And
I love that.
But the only problem is I think she's going to die.
Oh, boy.
I have this feeling, and I'm afraid to finish the book because I'm afraid she's going to die, and if she dies, I'm going to be really upset.
Yeah, well, then the author's doing his or her job, right?
They are, but it's tough sometimes for a reader.
Care, you know.
I mean, people don't, sometimes people don't recover from character designing. Look what happened to Patricia Cornwell with Benton Wesley. You know, all of a sudden he was dead. And people were horrified. Like, you can't kill off this guy. You can't. And then, but then you bring him back and he's like a ghost anyway, so it doesn't really matter. He doesn't feel real anymore.
No.
He feels forced into the series. Just,
that's true, it's true. And readers can spot it when it doesn't feel real. I mean, I haven't read those books, but yeah, I understand what you're saying exactly.
I mean, I read everything she writes, but, you know, it has to feel completely authentic. You can't drop this stuff
for
in.
Sure. And, I mean, you know, you have to believe in it. If you don't believe in it as the writer, no one's going to believe in it who's reading it.
Now, is the aim to have every one of your books a one-word title?
I think we're kind of shooting for that, because the second book does not have a title. And so we've been playing around with titles, and they all seem to be coming down to one word, you know, short and impactful. Probably won't be a Radiohead song. I think I can get away with that twice. But
it's funny because I think of words that might fit for. I mean, creep is such a is one of those words that it brings to mind so many different things.
It does, and people use the word differently. You know, like you're creeping on me. You know, like you're stalking me on Facebook or whatever. People use it all the time, and or you're a creep, which can mean jerk or ass, you know, or whatever. So it's a good title, and they didn't change it. I'm glad.
So
I'm kind of committed to that title.
So you don't know what the next title is going to be?
No, I don't know yet.
When will you know?
Whenever we decide. It's
going to whenever it's... Whenever it's a,
whenever they tell me, no.
As one famous person, it happened with Nora Roberts when she came to our store one time, somebody said to her, when are you finished a book? And then her answer was, when I'm done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very final...
That's the perfect answer.
It's a perfect answer, but it also came out a little rude, though, because it's like, yeah. You know, it's like, oh, well.
I think it's because it's a really hard question to answer, because the book doesn't feel done until it's published.
Well, how do you know when it's done? How do you know when you can't make it a better book than you have?
I think for me, it comes when I'm changing words back and forth. It's like I'm putting in a comma, and then I take it out, and then I put it back in again, and I take it out, and I'm like, okay, you know what, I'm done.
You have problems with commas?
Well, as an example, you know, when you're picking over something really minor,
right.
And you keep changing what it's going to be, and it makes no difference in the end anyways. When you know that you're picking over things that make no difference in the end anyways, that's when you're done. That's how I know I'm done.
And I've read books where commas were in the wrong place, and that annoys me.
Yeah.
Anytime as a reader, you... No, I didn't find any mistakes with your books. I don't remember your book. I did not find one thing that I...
Good.
That I thought was wrong, which is amazing, which is great.
The copy editor did a really good job catching everything.
Well, keep that copy editor because
I know.
It's really important as a reader that there aren't any mistakes.
I hope I get them again.
Because when I hit a mistake, I always think, oh, that's so stupid.
Well,
somebody should have caught that.
Yeah, it jars you because it pulls you out of the story. And then you're like, hey, that's wrong.
So you're going to stick with thrillers for the length of time you write? I mean, is that your plan?
You know, I have fantasies about writing something completely different someday. And I imagine writing a big, juicy romance novel or something just totally, you know, different than thrillers. But thrillers are where my heart is.
But you have all kinds of ideas? I mean, do you have, like, an idea file?
Nope. I am one of those unfortunate people who gets one good idea a year. I have writer friends who have notebooks that they keep with them, and they're always filled with, you know, random bits of inspiration. I don't have that, and that doesn't happen to me. I get one good idea a year, and I run with it.
Hmm.
So... It's yeah. That's
well,
how it works.
I think one idea is enough for at a
well,
time.
It's enough, and I, you know, one of my friends told me that the best thing that you can do is learn how to finish a novel because so many people can start one, and a lot of people do. But it takes skill to finish one. It takes commitment to finish one.
I don't think readers realize how hard it really is.
Yeah, it really is hard to finish it. I mean, it's one thing to get going because you have an idea and you're excited, but then how do you maintain that? You know, how do you maintain that over 300, 400 pages?
I mean, there are books that I've read that are just really great from beginning to end. And,
yeah.
And you know, that it's a trick to do that. It's
very hard. I can't explain how what makes one book great from beginning to end and other books lag in places. I don't know.
And not to pick on Nelson DeMille. I love Nelson DeMille. But he wrote a book called The General's Daughter, which...
Uh-huh.
At the very beginning, it's a fantastic book. At the very middle, it's a fantastic book. But all of a sudden, at the end, to me... It fell apart, fell apart, and that really irks me. I don't like that. I want to have an ending.
You don't want to feel that invested and then be disappointed.
Right now, I think I'm in the minority that way because he's ultra successful, and that didn't seem to affect his career at all. But that ending did not work for me, and it never will.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not. It just wasn't the ending I wanted. I felt the same way about The Black Tower, P.D. James's The Black Tower, which was fantastic up until the end. And then it was like, oh, I can't believe it.
Did you tell the author that that's how you felt?
No, I don't think I told them that. But I did feel that way, and it has to make sense to me at the end, and it has to be a twist. I like the twist. I like not knowing how it's going to end. I don't want to see it coming.
Right, you know.
And people, and there's no way anybody could see the ending coming in this. I don't know how you could. Looking back on it, I don't think there are any clues. Do you?
There are clues.
Oh, there are clues?
Yeah, there's one or two if you dissect it. I think if you read it a second time, you probably...
So you put that in intentionally?
Yeah, I mean, I did, because I actually had so much more... Well, the first draft I wrote was really long. I mean, I overwrote it big time.
Right.
And a lot of what I cut out would have revealed that twist a lot earlier. So, I mean, I was definitely building towards that. So if you pay attention really closely, you'll see little bits popping up here and there. But, I mean, yeah, the main storyline is what keeps you engaged. So.
Right. I didn't see any of it coming, so I feel totally fooled.
<That's good too.
laughs> Now I feel stupid. I feel like I should have seen it.
No.
Well, there's,
no, no, no.
But see, that's going to be the challenge of your next book, for me to see if I can figure out the ending. And anybody out there, I defy you to try to figure out the ending of this book. I mean, it's just... And that's a good way
no pressure. Thanks for that.
And that's a good marketing thing with this book. I mean, you say that to people, you know, I dare you to try to figure out the ending of this book. It makes people want to read the book.
That's funny, though. I think everyone's different, because I've had people tell me they knew, like, right from the beginning.
I didn't know at all. I had no idea.
I was like, I didn't even know.
I think I was, I don't want to say too much, but it was like the sixth sense. I was too focused on other things. I didn't see it.
And that's... the art of a good thriller, right? It's all about misdirection.
Well,
you want you to look one way while something else.
Well, I wish you all the best with this book. We've just about run out of time.
Thank you so much.
It's been just wonderful to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
We'll have to talk to you for the next book. The book is called Creep. It is out from Gallery Books. It's a division of Simon & Schuster's and all your bookstores now. And I dare you to try to figure out the ending. I really do.
You've thrown down the gauntlet.
That's right. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.